Today on The Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about nightmares with author and dream analyst J.M. Debord. Nightmares, we've all had them. You're trapped or chased, haunted by demons, and then you wake up terrified or wondering what it all meant. They can be triggered by many things like stress, life changes, illness, and maybe the reason is simply that scary movie you watched before bed. But is your unconscious mind delivering messages to you while you sleep? Let's explore the tools you'll need to sort through and make sense of your nightmares. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, a conversation about nightmares with J.M. Debord, author of Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. There are people who do have recurring nightmares that, by reading this book, it might give them some insight to their own issues. And maybe if they keep track of these dreams and start looking into them a little deeper, it could resolve some trauma that they're dealing with in life. Maybe you need to dive in.
Yeah, you do. Because this is the way that I conceptualize nightmares for my students, my readers. I teach them that you're having nightmares for a reason or reasons, and it often relates to something in your life that needs to be fixed. Something in you is crying out for you to give it the attention that it needs. And if you try to ignore it, you're doing exactly what it is that's producing the nightmares in the first place. When you trace over a history of someone's dream life and you're like, well, here's where the nightmares started. Let's look back further. And what you can often see is that the dreams started with gentler methods to try to get their attention. It didn't work. So then they had to keep cranking up the juice. I think of nightmares as the volume on 11. It is something inside of you that is screaming at you because you can't go on the same way any longer. There is something eating you from the inside. There is something that needs to be healed. There's something that needs to be reconciled. And you are ignoring it or you're not getting the message. I mean, what do you do, Carol, when someone is not listening to you? You use more, and you need them to hear you. You use more and more drastic means of getting across the message. And that's what nightmares do. In most cases, you can find it in the relationship that's dysfunctional, the job that is stressing you out, the trauma that you experienced and it's unhealed. These are three examples of maybe we could list about 10. That's the most common reasons for nightmares. Yeah. And in my book, at some point or another, I cover all those very common reasons for even like, you know, you mentioned food and illness and stuff. You can have a nightmare because something isn't digesting right. You can have a nightmare because you ate something that's interacting with your system or you're taking some drug that is interacting with you in a bad way or withdrawing from an SSRI drug. You want to start talking about nightmares? Look up Cymbalta nightmares. And if they haven't scrubbed that one from the internet yet, then you'll find that there are people who withdraw from that drug. And I had the most horrible nightmares I've ever heard about. And they're nonsensical. Because what it is that your body reacting to something that's changing in its biochemistry and it doesn't like it. So there are reasons that you can have nightmares other than some dark thing, you know, is centuries old and bound to its, you know, black magic is after you. And in fact, I would discourage people from those conclusions because it's way, way too easy to have a dream like that and think that you're being haunted. There's a poltergeist in my dream. Look into the study of poltergeists from organizations like the Society for Psychical Research and from parapsychologists like Jeffrey Mishlov. What do they conclude? That the psyche can manifest things in the physical world, including poltergeists, alien abductions, black magic sorcerers, you can actually manifest this stuff and the other stuff, the good stuff, that well, quote unquote, you know, the angels, the beings of light, the spiritual guides and mentors. You can actually manifest those things from your own psyche. And that's the thing that you have to be really careful of. And that's why I say that when nightmares, if you're going to address your nightmares, then the first thing you have to do is take responsibility for them. Because for one, you're creating your nightmares. You're creating your dreams. And there's a simple logic to why. Because you know what's going on subconsciously because you create your dreams. They're not being beamed into your head. As soon as someone says something like that, they say, oh, you know, I think my nightmares are being like something is entering into my sleep and it's producing these nightmares. And as soon as I hear that, I go, no, you're not taking responsibility for them. Even if something is coming in from the outside and producing your nightmares, you still have to take responsibility for it. The shaman taught me to think of responsibility as two words. Responsibility. It means the ability to respond. Because what happens when people have chronic nightmares? They get frozen in, you know, sometimes in terror, and they can't respond. They won't respond. So when he says take responsibility, it's the first step to being able to respond proactively. And that's what you have to do. That's how you trace the dreams to their source and find out what's really behind them.
I have a question for you that you might or might not know the answer to. But what is the difference between a nightmare and sleep paralysis? Is there a fine line between them? Are they different? Are they kind of the same? I've had problems with sleep paralysis for years. I mean, and it's not every day. It might be once every 6 months. It might be once every 3 months. But it's different because I know I'm having this dream and I'm trying so hard to wake up and I can't. Is that just a form of a nightmare?
It is a cause behind the scenes, and it's a physical cause. Sleep paralysis, let's bring it into the realm of the medical literature. It's known as REM atonia. REM as in rapid eye movement stage of sleep. It's when you're experiencing the most vivid dreams. The sleep paralysis or REM atonia is the body's protective mechanism to keep you from thrashing about and acting out your dreams and responding to them physically and possibly harming yourself, hurting yourself or someone around you. It is a natural state as you're dreaming. Your body, it secretes a hormone that subdues the signals from the brainstem into the nervous system. It's natural and it's necessary. But what happens sometimes is that you become aware of the fact that you can't move. You're paralyzed. Mm-hmm. It produces fear. Now, the dreaming mind, think of it as a translator, and it takes any input it receives and turns it into or translates it into symbolic imagery. So if it's a memory that your mind is replaying as you're sleeping, that memory is turned into symbolic imagery. If you're experiencing an emotion, it's turned into symbolic imagery. If you realize that you're paralyzed and it scares the crap out of you, it turns it into symbolic imagery. Sleep paralysis has been behind a lot of nightmares. But here's the thing. You're having the nightmare after your eyes open because you're laying there in bed or wherever you're sleeping and you can't move, but your dreaming function is still active. You're still dreaming. Mm-hmm. And it's receiving the input. Okay, I can't move. Now I'm getting scared. Now the dream imagery is responding. I still can't move. I'm terrified. Now the dream imagery is responding by producing terrifying imagery. And it will take the deepest, darkest, nastiest things out of your memory, and it will turn them into a living reality that is augmented over top of physical reality. In other words, your eyes open and you're seeing these things. You're seeing the demon on your chest. You're seeing the aliens that are abducting you. You know, you're seeing the dark, sinister force take form as a shadow at the foot of your bed. And, you know, just that your worst fears come true because you're reacting with fear to the scenario And you can tell the difference because there are people who cultivate sleep paralysis as an ability to enter into an altered state of consciousness. And they relish the opportunity because the dreaming function is still running and they can direct the dream by, they can say, okay, I want to experience like a lucid dream, whatever it is, but it's good and they can direct it. And for them, sleep paralysis is fun.
I find that absurd. Out of that.
I know. It sounds crazy, but it's, yeah, Ryan Hurd. I just had him on The Dreams That Shape Us. He was our most recent guest. And that's my podcast. And Ryan learned how to cultivate sleep paralysis, lucid dreaming. But sleep paralysis is a precursor to lucid dreaming and out-of-body experiences. And so he's learned how to work with it, and he's made it fun for him. Most people, I do realize, when you say sleep paralysis, they go, oh God, not that again. It's not fun for them. But it shows the difference. If you react with fear and terror, you get fearsome and terrifying imagery and experiences. If you react with, great, I'm in sleep paralysis, now we can have some fun, you get fun. It's a translator. It responds to whatever it is you're thinking and feeling and whatever input that it receives.
I mean, that makes sense the way you just said that. But next time it happens to me, so if I can just focus on rainbows and unicorns and cupcakes, maybe, instead of get scared, I can't wake up, just go cupcakes, yeah. cupcakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or learn how to do out-of-body travel. We call it astral projection, but I just like to say out-of-body experience. And you can go, okay, I'm in sleep paralysis. I'm laying here. What do I look like from the ceiling? Let me switch perspectives. You got to get used to the idea of seeing your body laying there without your consciousness awareness centered within it. But then if you can do that, you can go, holy crap. My consciousness is not tied to my body in the, it has to exist within it. It's just temporarily a resident there. And it can separate from it and have experiences outside of the body. And then you go, well, where else can I go? You know, if I'm here on the ceiling looking down at my body, is this the limits of what I can do? And then you can start doing other things. Bob Monroe, the first times that this happened to him, he wrote Journeys Out of Body. He's very famous for teaching how to astral project. And Bob said that the first times it happened to him, that he got caught on the ceiling. Like he would go up and up and up, and then he would hit the ceiling.
How do you
and
get back? Further.
He learned that it was an illusion. He expected the ceiling to be there and that it would stop him. And that's what happened. And when he worked his way through it, it happened a few times to him, and he would always get caught in the ceiling. In fact, he said he got caught in the ceiling fan. There he is, this soul body getting whipped around by a ceiling fan. You know, he's like, okay, this is ridiculous.
I got to work what on in this. The world?
You know, yeah. And he goes, and there was very little for him to go by. He didn't understand what was happening to him. This is the 1960s. You know, there's very little literature. This stuff was not talked about openly. But he worked through it and he said, okay, well, if this is an experience that's a lot like a dream, then it means that I'm only limited by my beliefs. So if I believe that I can't float up any higher than the ceiling, and that's what happens, then I'm only limited by my belief. So the next time it happened to him, he said he just floated right through the ceiling. And then he found himself like outside of his house and he's looking up at the sky and he's going, can I go up there? The next thing he knows, he's flying up into the sky. Bob went and explored the universe in his astral experiences. I mean, over decades, but he got to explore things and find out things that were, you know, just mind-boggling. And so that's why I explain this as a belief thing, because your dreams respond to your beliefs in the same way that Bob's astral experiences were created by his beliefs or shaped by them. And that if you can walk into a dream space knowing this, you're armed with this information. Well, now you can proactively decide where you want to go and what you want to experience in your dreams.
don't you think that you can take that concept into just regular going to bed dreaming? Can you kind of direct it? Because there's people listening right now who experience nightmares, and their cause might be more of a stress-related dream or something. And what's great about the book is it's going to give you some ideas on what that could mean and what those things could mean. I think once you know what the dream means, you can figure out how to correct it in your waking life.
So you begin with journaling the dreams and using them as a prompt for like a diary. You just write as a like a journal. I use my journal, my dream journal, and I'll write down my dreams. And then the next thing I do is I go, okay, let's just let the thought flow. Let's get this down on paper. I know a lot about dream symbolism and stuff, so I can often begin analyzing and working my way into the dreams and gaining more knowledge and information. And then before I go to bed, I review my journal. And by then things have been, you know, the process starts consciously, but there's a lot of wheels turning subconsciously too. The dreaming mind is trying to help you come to these realizations. I mean, it knows this stuff already. It's trying to teach it to you. And so you review it before you go to bed. I have found that to be a great practice. Because now I go back and I look at some recent dreams. Sometimes I just open to a random page and I start reading. And what it's doing is it's cueing me up. It's preparing me for sleep. You make a ritual out of going to bed so that when, you know, you review your dream journal, you consciously go to sleep. You could redo a mantra, you know, something that's really going to put in your mind the thing that you need to know. I'm about to go to sleep. I'm about to have dreams. I want to be aware while I'm dreaming. I want to be more conscious of myself while I'm dreaming. Keep saying that to yourself as you fall asleep. And it will translate into one, better dreaming, two, better recall, and three, better ability to respond while you're dreaming. Response, ability. How do you give yourself the ability to respond? And so now you're dreaming, and I've seen this happen. And Ryan talked about a bully that Ryan had a real bully in his life that just terrorized him when he was younger. This bully kept with him in his dreams. He said that one night when he was dreaming, this bully appears, and he'd been through this before, like, oh, great, he's going to beat me up again, you know? But he's like, no, wait a minute, I can respond differently. And he learned that if you embrace things with radical love, that they will respond differently to you if you learn how to respond differently to them. Because when you run from the bully, let's say that's your typical pattern, there's the bully or the monster or whatever it is that frightens you in a dream. Your typical pattern is to run. Ryan said, no, learn how to turn around and hug him. See, he said, like with his bully, he like sat down with it and expressed genuine concern. Like, talk to me, brother. Tell me what's going on. Why are we locked in this battle? And he found that the bully, when he embraced it with love, transformed before his very eyes. And it was no longer a bully. It became an ally. In season 3, episode 1, which was just 2 episodes ago, we had Professor Scott Sparrow on. And Scott wrote the first book on lucid dreaming in the West, in modern. It was in the 70s. There had been a book back in the 20s too. But it fell out of, nobody knew about it. Scott experienced a lucid dream, and he'd been doing these really intensive meditation practices. And he found that a door opened in his dream that revealed heaven to him. Heaven. He entered into heaven in his dream. And he said that it filled him with divine love like nothing he had ever experienced. And he spent the next 50 years chasing that, wanting to re-experience it and wanting to live and be a person who could channel that divine love that he experienced in his dreams. But he said that it was because he responded to what he saw in his dream with a curiosity that he knew that the divine light was behind everything in his dreams. So he started looking for it. It was there. He just had to embrace it. And he said that it often comes to us through the darkest things in our dreams. So, Carol, you want to talk about a real, you know, paradox.
Mm-hmm.
The darkest, nastiest, most evil things in your dreams are actually the divine light in disguise. And if you respond to it in a way that brings out the love in it, then it will show you that it is the divine light, and you will have an experience of ecstasy. Mystical ecstasy. That's what Scott said he experienced. That's what Ryan said he's experienced. My co-host, Steve Ernenwine, says he's experienced it too. And I'm doing the meditation practices and stuff that are a precursor for this and trying to have that experience for myself. Because I tell you, the way they explain it is it's like nothing else. It's an experience. It's beyond words. You just have to, you have to find out for yourself.
But I think that a lot of people with the information that you give people in the book, they can take that and start working on their own dreams. You know, they're not going to get to this point right away. None of us will. But I think that I think it takes practice and time. And I think you can resolve a lot of issues in your own life through resolving the issues in your dreams. Because you said something in the book that really stuck with me. I wrote it down. It was, everything you encounter in your dreams somehow leads back to you. And when you think about that in your dream, you know, I might think, oh, this was some stupid. I have funny dreams frequently that I'll wake up laughing about. It was so absurd, which I love those. Probably says a lot about me. But I like that idea that everything does lead back to you. And a lot of times I'll have dreams from, I'm in college and I just haven't gotten to that one class yet. I can't find the building. I need to get to the class. I'm going to flunk. What am I going to do? Waitering tables. I have
both those themes all the time.
Oh my God. And it's always connected to stress in my life. There's some stress, underlying stress somewhere, which is why I'm having that dream about waitressing where I can't get to that table. They've oversat me. There's all these things. Those dreams do lead back to me. Even though I'm not in college, I haven't waited tables in years.
Yeah. And it, you can, well, one, it takes you back to the responsibility of a dream, because it does all lead back to you. So you have to understand that this is something that you are creating for yourself. A dream is a self-created experience. And then you start working backward from there and you go, well, why did I create it for myself? Well, there's a purpose to dreaming. Mostly it's for learning and growth. And you go, okay, well, if this is for learning or growth, then how can I learn from this and how can I grow? Is it showing me that I'm stuck in some place in my life? Is it cueing me to say, okay, here you go, Carol, you're under the same stress again. You need to be consciously aware of this. Stress is not good, but you're going to experience it. And now let's be conscious about it. Let's do something about it if we can, which you can. You can respond. You can do something about the stress. I like to teach people this as a beginning concept for getting into dreams. It puts them in the right frame of mind for it. And it also empowers them. A lot of us think that we have to see a dream analyst or a psychologist to understand our dreams. And I go, well, there are things that you can learn from them. And certainly it, you know, if you come across someone who's skilled at this, then by all means do it, but don't wait. Okay. Let's start really engaging with our dreams now and working through the content of them ourselves and feeling our way through it. And let's start looking for what we see about ourselves in our dream content. Let's look and see how they reflect the circumstances and events and situations of our lives, but also what's going on inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
I find that most dreams reflect basically, you can start with emotions and feelings and go deeper into structures of the mind, thinking processes, mental functions, and then you can go deeper from there into structures of the psyche and aspects of mind and spirit that come from the very deepest parts of ourselves. You want to look at everything that happens in your dreams and see how it leads back to you.
You have different books, and there's more than just the Nightmares book, but the Dream Interpretation Dictionary. I think you've got books out there that can really help people in interpreting their dreams. And then you also host a Reddit site that's huge, and it's really interesting to read other people's dreams and read the input on other people's dreams. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, that's r/dreams, which is Reddit speak for Reddit. It's dreams.reddit.com is the way to get there directly. And, you know, Reddit is a massive social media site. And since 2009, I've been a member of a community there devoted to dreams. And since 2013, I've been the lead community moderator there. So we're going on 10 years now. And I help to run that community and provide a safe place for people to talk about their dreams. And then give me a whole lot of material to use for teaching, because I'll interact with people there, talk with them about their dreams. And then I can use those dreams as examples, sometimes specific content, and then sometimes the patterns, you know, like the teeth dreams. Go there right now on the front page, and I bet there's someone who's going to talk about a teeth dream.
And here I thought it was just me all these years.
And you'll see how common it is. You know, so I learned all those things, and it's really helped me as a teacher, but it's also given me a place where I can practice my craft. It's sort of my, not to stretch the analogy too far, but it's kind of my temple, in the sense of like a temple of Asclepius. A friend of mine helped me to realize this recently, because I've been talking, the temples of Asclepius were, Asclepius was the god of dreams and healing. It's the rod of Asclepius was a sign of medicine, and the caduceus is based off of that. Asclepius was, he taught people medicine. The Hippocratic Oath was, you know, the Hippocrates said that he learned from, you know, like Asclepius goes very deep. And I'm just trying to give some quick background. They used to have these temples all over the Mediterranean where people would go because they were sick and they needed healing. And how would they get their healing? Well, on the one hand, you have good food, open air, less stress. These are temple environments. And then they had specially trained priests who would walk around among the people who slept out in the open on the ground among snakes everywhere. And they would have dreams where the god would visit them and tell them what they needed to do to heal. There were hundreds of these temples over the centuries throughout the Middle East. Or the Middle East, but more the Mediterranean. And I had this mission that I came up with. I was like, we need to rebuild the temple. We need to have a place where people can go to find the healing power of their dreams. And I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and he goes, dude, you already did it. He's like, Reddit dreams, your dream subreddit is a place where people go to find out about their dreams and find the healing magic in them. And I went, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. It is an analogy that I stretched a little bit, but it gives you an idea of what it means to me. That place has been my baby, and I've put years of effort into it. It's now, there's 300,000 subscribers. The amount of traffic is, the internet traffic is just off the charts. And it is by far the most popular place online to share dreams. So people know me there as Rad Owl. You know, it's funny, Carol, you know, J.M. DeBoard, you see that name on the cover of all those books and the online courses and my podcast. And we reach, I mean, we, between all those forms of media, it has a pretty big reach, but it pales in comparison to what my reach is at Reddit.
Isn't that something?
I've reached tens of millions of people that way. Because I can look at the traffic numbers and multiply over the years and go, oh my goodness, that's my baby. And I encourage people to come there. I really need people who know. I mean, if you have questions and you just want to share dreams, that's, you know, please come by. But I also need people who know their stuff when it comes to dreams to come there and be a priest of Asclepius. I need you to come there and share what you know, because I have 10 times more people asking questions than I do having them answering them. So I need people to come and share. And you don't have to be a dream expert, you know, in that sense. If you know how to talk with people about dreams, or just even know how to kind of work with your own, then I need you. I need you to come there and start engaging with people. Your reach by answering one person's dream, you can reach 100. Over time, you could reach 1,000, just simply because they've had dreams like that too, and they're going to run across that content. And then over time, you could reach hundreds of thousands, because that's what the numbers show. When I look at the traffic numbers, it's, yeah, massive.
So does that mean I need to jump on and talk to people about waitressing dreams?
Hey, yeah. God. And, you know, and teeth dreams. You
and
know,
their food's and, not coming out, and yeah. I can't get to that table.
Yeah, yeah, oversat, you know.
Yes, our all of the things.
Terminology for getting seated too many tables at once, and you can't take care of them all, which oh, I have found gosh. Sometimes relates to when I've had too many things to do at home that are kind of chore related, you know, waitressing. There's a lot of picking up, you know, you're delivering food, picking up dishes, you know, taking care of a million little details. Uh-huh. I found that happens when I'm at home. It's also played around with the idea of being in a point of sale. I couldn't get the point of sale machine to work. And I realized that I was having one time it related to having difficulty figuring out how I was going to turn my skills into money. I turn my work that I do as a dream expert and turn it into money. I mean, there were so many different ways that that dream speaks to me. It's pretty wild.
That's interesting. Yeah. Well, this has been such a great conversation today. I've really enjoyed
it. It's been a blast.
I've been looking forward to talking to you and kind of diving in on this. And it's just, it's been really good. So thank you so very much for being on with us today.
You've been a great host, and I've really enjoyed this. Thank you for having me on as your guest and giving me the opportunity to share what I know.
And that wraps up our conversation with J.M. DeBord. If you want to learn more about your nightmares and what they mean, you really need to read his book, Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. Also, listen to his podcast, The Dreams That Shape Us, and visit his website, jmdebord.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free, or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there, also all ad-free. And for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes. Thank you for listening.